Wednesday, June 1st, 2016. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. You know, we release a new podcast every single Wednesday and bring you a little bit different look at the sports world than you get anywhere else. You can listen, you can download, or you can subscribe to the podcast pretty much anywhere. You want to go to iTunes, you want to go over to Stitcher, you could go to somewhere like Podcast Republic, or you could even head over to rogueintel.com and listen to it there. You know, the Daily Dose is a proud member of the Rogue Intel Podcast Network. And while you're over at rogueintel.com, you might want to check out one of the other podcasts that they have over there. A couple different things that might be of interest to you. You know, whether it's the Prime Podcast with Duff, Carey, and TJ. Maybe it's Now That I'm Older with Shane and Kenny. I've listened to that a few times. Those guys are actually a little bit crazy, but you know, you're sure to find something that you're going to like. Might want to head over and check that out. If you would like to contact the show for any reason, you got a question, got a comment, need some advice, you know, at some point coming up, probably this summer, we will have one of our email episodes where we just read some listener emails. And if you've got something that you would like to contribute to the cause, feel free to email us. That email address is dailydosesports@gmail.com. That is D-A-L-Y, dailydosesports@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. You can also head over to our website. We are known to post an article or two every week. We may have an article. We may have a poll. We may have a poll up this week that you might want to check out. You might want to see what that one's about. Dailydosesports.wordpress.com. We would appreciate you stopping by there. And you can also check us out on Twitter or on Facebook. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. This week on the show, got a few different things for you. You know, the Stanley Cup final began this week. I don't think it's the finals. I don't know why. I think it's Stanley Cup final, NBA finals. I don't know how they make that distinction. But the Stanley Cup final began this week. We could actually talk some hockey. I mean, we're not going to talk much hockey. This isn't Canada. But, you know, we might talk about it a little bit. You know, playoff hockey, there is something a little bit different. When it gets to this level, it's a little bit crazy. There is also, you know, I want you to think about this for just a second. Who is the most hated player in the NFL? There is a player in the National Football League that might be hated more than anyone else in the NFL. And you might not have any idea that this player is hated so badly, but apparently he is. I want to talk to you about that. And I mean, this isn't the guy that you would think of hating, but I don't know. Apparently people do. And the NBA Finals are now set. A crazy, crazy Western Conference Final. Going to talk a little bit about that and going to give you a preview, you know, as only the Daily Dose can, to get you ready for the NBA Finals. Not the final, NBA Finals. On the basketball side. Plus, as we always do, we have to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. Always a very, very popular segment on the show. You never know which you know, like what direction the Daily Dose Top 5 goes. It goes a number of different ways. It might inform you. It might entertain you. It might give you, you know, a little bit of a flashback to when you were a little bit younger. It might, you never know. You got to stick around for the Daily Dose Top 5. Let's get this out of the way. Did you enjoy your Memorial Day weekend? We talked a little bit last week about Memorial Day. You know, and Memorial Day, of course, you know, is meant to be, you know, something a little bit special, you know. And I have to be sure right now to stop for a second and thank the men and women around the world who are serving our country. But, you know, Memorial Day, it's kind of taken on kind of an interesting sort of identity, hasn't it? I mean, Memorial Day started way back after the Civil War. That's when it started. It was a holiday to remember those who died while in military service. It's not Veterans Day. Sometimes people get it confused with Veterans Day. Veterans Day is, you know, everybody who serves. You know, Memorial Day is people who have actually died in military service. But we like to thank, you know, the veterans at this time as well. And I mean, but we do it a little different. We do thank them and we do appreciate them. I think it is a little bit of a time of reflection. You see some of those things. You see some of the parades and thinking about some of those. But as we tend to do, it's kind of turned into like the start of summer holiday. Like start of summer, end of school kind of holiday. You know, we have a lot of barbecues because as Americans, holidays, let's be honest, holidays are meant for gluttony. So we gorge ourselves and we drink heavily like we do on literally every single holiday of the year. Pick a holiday. Name a holiday. Oh, yeah, we eat a lot and drink a lot. How about this holiday? Yep, eat a lot, drink a lot. How about Christmas? Yep, eat a lot, drink a lot. Thanksgiving? Just eat a lot, and then we also drink a lot. How about Halloween? Dress up like sluts and eat and drink a lot. St. Patrick's Day? I mean, pick a holiday. That's what we do. We eat a lot, and we drink a lot. Now, the thing that's, you know, like we do that on every single holiday, but this one... And I mean, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. Like, I'm not talking down to you and being like, you shouldn't do that. I mean, that's what holidays are. That's, I don't know, like what Jesus intended. But Memorial Day, since it also kind of signifies the beginning of summer, we start seeing people, you know, wearing less clothes. That's kind of a catch-22, isn't it? Like, that's kind of a good news, bad news. Like, yes, you get the beautiful people, but you're also going to get way more on that other side. Like, for every one of the beautiful people you get wearing less clothes, you get like 47 people that shouldn't be wearing less clothes, but they're wearing the least amount of clothes that are like legally possible. Makes no sense. I mean, mirrors are available everywhere. Like, you don't have to be rich to afford a mirror, do you? If you can't afford one, they're actually out in like nature. You can get one. Like, you can walk up to like a window or like a pond you can see what the rest of us are seeing. Like, you need to see what I see. I don't know. You know, public swimming pools open this week. A lot of public swimming pools were opening. Maybe you live in a subdivision, or maybe you live in an apartment complex, whatever, and your public swimming pool, might have opened. That always happens right around Memorial Day. I know that over the past, and I don't want to get too political, but I know that over the past few weeks, there's been a lot of discussion in like the political realm and in the news and in a lot of social circles about President Obama opening public schools. He basically ordered public schools to open restrooms up to use, and you can use the bathroom of the gender identity that you choose. Like, whatever it is, whatever, you know, gender that you identify with, that's what you choose. And like I said, I don't want to get all political. But I know that there were a lot of people that were like really upset. Like, I had people emailing me, like sending things to Daily Dose, like, what's going on? What's Obama doing? And here's the thing you got to realize. It's honestly, it's nothing new. It's not that different. It really isn't. And you might say, well, it's new here. It's new in America. No, it's not. It's really not that new at all to have these like open gender restroom. I mean, I have always identified as a male, but I'm telling you right now, I've been peeing with females since like the 80s. I mean, I've been to public pools, and don't you get all self-righteous with me. You've been doing it too. You know, you don't jump out of that public pool and like freeze to death and shiver and shake all the way as you walk across that hard, cold, you know, concrete over to the bathroom and then stand in line at the restroom and then you wait and you're freezing the whole time. You just went, eh. You know, I'll go down in the corner of the deep end and act like I'm working on my front stroke. And, I'll just kind of knock this out. That way I don't have to get out. Yeah, I'm telling you right now, public pools are like the first transgender restrooms that we've had in America. And they've been going on for years. We've all been peeing together for years. Don't act like this is something new. Don't act like you're above this sort of thing. You've done it too. But did you enjoy the Memorial Day weekend? I actually watched some auto racing. Like, this is the one time. Like, I watch it like once, but this is it. I did watch some auto racing. Rookie Alexander Rossi won the Indy 500. Kind of an odd race. A little bit of an anticlimactic race. I'm not sure he was anywhere near the fastest car. It seemed like all day, James Hinchcliffe, maybe Tony Kanaan might have been the quicker cars. But, you know, he took a chance, didn't pit late. It paid off. He won the race. It's not the first time that's happened. It's not the first time a rookie has won. It certainly isn't the first time that someone kind of fell into winning the 500. It's a 500-mile race. Weird things tend to happen. But I did find it a little bit funny. I heard from a few listeners. If you tuned in last week to the Daily Dose, you heard my top five last week. And I talked a little bit about what they need to do to kind of fix the Indy 500. Because the Indy 500, it's not as popular as it once was. I know it's not even as popular as when I was a kid, but it was even bigger probably back in the, you know, in the 50s and 60s. It was kind of hitting its peak and really hitting its stride. And 70s and 80s were pretty big as well. started to slow down a little bit in the 90s. They split. They had an issue with this, you know, this group of racers is going to go over here, and this group, and it kind of made a mess of it, and it's never really recovered. And so I talked last week a little bit about ways to fix the Indy 500. And I watched it on Sunday with some of those things in mind, and honestly, it's like watching like a rocket ship race. Like, I don't know. I guess they're going fast. Like they're going really fast. Nobody passes anybody. They just kind of line up in a single file, chase each other around there. But I mean, I actually heard from a few people. I heard from some people on email. I heard from a few people on Twitter, and they said, "What do you mean fix it? Maybe you're not as up to date on auto racing as you should be." Because do you realize that for the first time in 100 years, they actually sold all of the seats at the track? I think I heard from 5 or 6 people that said that. Do you realize, Clint, that this is the first time they've ever sold? They lifted the blackout locally in Indianapolis, which they've never done because they have to sell all the seats in order to lift the blackout. They finally did that. They finally lifted the blackout and it sold every single seat. Yeah, I mean, there were people there watching, and then that was about it. Just to give you an idea, I know it's super popular. Nationally, the Indy 500 drew a 4.1 share on Sunday. Now, you might sit there and say, well, that's not horrible, and it sort of is, but if you say that it's not, remember, this is a one-time-a-year thing. Like, do you really want to try to compare this to, like, a Super Bowl when they're pulling in, like, 47, you know, type of share or something like that, just for kind of a point of reference. The NASCAR race later that day, the Coca-Cola 600, drew a 5.5 rating. The Monday night game between the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Golden State Warriors drew a 15.9 rating. Do you see where this is going? They drew a 4.1 share. The NFL draft, the NFL, just picking teams, drew a 5.6 rating. Like it or not, the Indy 500 is broke. I mean, you can try to argue that if you want. Maybe they handed some of those seats away locally so that they could lift the blackout. And, well, hey, we sold every single seat. Yeah, but nobody's watching it. And nobody nationally really cares. It's not anything that anybody has to be a part of. There's no celebration. There's no Super Bowl Sunday feel to the Indy 500. Eh, if I wake up in time, maybe I'll watch it. I don't know. I'll turn it on. I'll make my barbecue and I'll do something else. But nobody's tuning in. So slow down on, hey, you're missing the boat on this one. No, I'm not. Nobody watches. Nobody cares. I gave you a couple ways to fix that. If you'd like to check those ways out, like I said before, head over to rogueintel.com. Head over to dailydosesports.wordpress.com. You can listen to the episode and check out a few of the helpful hints that I offered. Who is the most hated player in the NFL? You might stop for a second and think about that. There's a few different players. Maybe it's, you know, like a Ndamukong Suh with the Detroit Lions. You know, questionable. Is he kind of a dirty player? Is he? Maybe it's like a Tom Brady. He's been a winner. He's, you know, he's a little bit. He'll talk some garbage. He's not afraid to talk a little bit at you as he's beating you. Who is the guy that is the most hated player in the NFL? It might surprise you. Stick around for just a minute. I'm going to tell you who it kind of seems like might be the most hated player in the National Football League. As bizarre as that sounds, this might be the guy. We'll be right back.
Dear podcast listener, we accept the fact that we have to sacrifice not only our Wednesdays, but our Fridays as well to entertain you. But we think you are crazy to make us do a promo telling you who we think we are. When you listen to our podcast, you think you know who we are, in the simplest terms, in the most convenient definitions. But what we found out is that each one of us is a dork.
I had the basket case, and I'm a princess.
And I'm a pothead.
Does that answer your question? Sincerely yours, The Prime Podcast. Find out more at theprimepod.com. Think of the tender things that we were working
on. Harry Potter, what are you doing listening to Rogue Intel? That podcast is for Slytherin.
Hi guys, Cooper here from the Unquote Podcast. Unquote delves into what makes movie quotes so, well, quotable. See, I have a guest each week watch a movie selected from the American Film Institute's Top 100 Movie Quotes list, and then we sit down and ponder cultural impingement and cinematic preponderance, and okay, you got me, my thesaurus was totally open. A little factual and a lot of fun, it's the least contentious peanut gallery in history. Unquote is part of the Rogue Intel Network, and you can find me on iTunes, Facebook, and Twitter.
Okay, so you've had a few minutes to think about it. Did you think about who the most hated player in the NFL might be? Let me see if I can shed a little bit of light on that. Did you see the New York Jets? They're still in a standoff with quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick. You know, Fitzpatrick has a deal on the table from Jets management. And basically, the deal that is sitting on the table is worth about $8 million a year. Three-year deal, about $8 million a year. Problem is that the bearded one was thinking more like around $12 million a year. Now, you might sit there and say, oh, this is ridiculous. They're quibbling over just, you know, tiny bits of money. $8 million, $12 million, come on, $40 million. Well, it's 3 years. So it's not just like $4 million. It's like $12 million. I mean, that's a little bit more. I know it might seem like, you know, millionaires like arguing over petty amounts of money, but $12 million, it's at the end of the day, $12 million. Now, I'm not a big Ryan Fitzpatrick fan. It seems like he kind of is who we think he is, and every time we think we're going to get something great for him, we end up kind of getting the same old thing from Ryan Fitzpatrick, and at the end of the day, he ends up throwing the ball to the wrong team. But keep in mind, he did throw like 31 touchdowns last year, so dude wants to get paid. It's probably his last chance to get a hefty contract. He wants to get paid. But that part's not interesting. You might be hearing that right now and be like, oh, it's so big deal. I mean, teams always are in arguments with their players. We don't want to pay you as much. We want you to pay me more. That's not interesting. We see guys do that stuff all the time. Here's when this got interesting. Last week, this got interesting. Because, see, the Jets wide receivers Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker decided not to go to voluntary OTAs. Now, I put the word voluntary in quotation marks because, of course, none of this is voluntary. They say voluntary, off-season training, whatever, activities. I think that's what that stands for, off-season training activities. They say they're voluntary. Nothing about it is voluntary. Show up or else. It's kind of like when your boss at your job tells you, hey, there's a voluntary meeting on Saturday on your day off. You might want to be there. Yeah, there's nothing voluntary about that. But the bottom line, Jets wide receivers Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker, they tried to show some support for their quarterback, Ryan Fitzpatrick. They want a deal done. And so what they did is they stayed home. They want him signed. Now, that all sounds good. That sounds great. Look at these guys. They're teammates. They've got his back. They want him to be here. But let's take a little bit of a different look at this. Because, yes, they want Ryan Fitzpatrick there. But here's a different perspective. Let's take a look at this from the perspective of backup quarterback for the Jets, Geno Smith. Last year, it looks like he's going to be the starter. Then he gets jacked in the face. Remember? You had the backup linebacker come clock him in the face because he owed him like $400 or something. Breaks his jaw, and he's out. With him out, the Jets almost make the playoffs last year. And now, the starter is holding out. He wants money. He wants to get paid. Management doesn't want to pay him. And the wide receivers are so desperate to not have you that they stay home too. At the risk of their own peril, at management getting mad at them. Now, I think they're going to show up this week. It sounds like they're showing up this week for OTAs, but they took the week off. Now, granted, that's not a huge, it's not like they made a huge sacrifice. I get that. But they did kind of stay out in show of support. Now, I don't know what's really going on, but Geno Smith, for whatever reason, people hate you. And I'm not talking about other teams. Like I said before, maybe Tom Brady is a guy that hates. Well, who hates Tom Brady? Well, the Ravens do. The Colts do. Broncos do. Other teams. Geno Smith is hated by his own team. It's not like other teams hate him. No one knows him. No one cares what he does. Your own team hates your guts. I want you to think about this, Geno Smith. Given the choice of playing with you or not playing at all, the New York Jets are going like all third grader on us and just like, oh, hey, you know what? I'm taking my ball and going home. I'd rather do something else. I don't want to play with him. If he's going to be the all-time quarterback, then I'm going to go do something else. I'm not playing with him. I don't like him. Geno Smith might be the most hated man in the NFL. As bizarre as that sounds. His own team hates his guts. I don't know why. I really don't. I don't know. Maybe he doesn't pay in his bets. I don't know. That's why that linebacker clocked him in the grill last year. I don't know what that is, but I do know this. His own team hates his guts. I told you I was going to talk a little hockey this week. And when I said a little, yeah, that's pretty much all I'm going to talk. I'm going to talk a little bit of hockey. Okay. Stanley Cup final. Finally here. We had game one last night. Very, very entertaining game. I know. Don't turn it off. Leave it alone. You don't have to fast forward. You don't have to do any of that stuff. Listen. Hear me out. We finally got some new blood in the Stanley Cup final. The San Jose Sharks are in their first final ever. They've never been there before. Every year, it seems like we're talking about San Jose. And many years, we're talking about them being the favorite to go to the Stanley Cup final. They never get there. They find a way. Usually, they never get past the first round. But they never get to the final. That doesn't happen. This year, they finally get there. The Pittsburgh Penguins. Now, you might sit there and say, well, the Penguins, they're there quite a bit. Do you realize that the Pittsburgh Penguins actually fired their head coach, Mike Johnson, 28 games into this season? Not a year ago. This year, earlier this year, they fired their head coach, replaced him with Mike Sullivan, and they've kind of gotten it going ever since then. But here's the reason I'm going to tell you, and I'm not, I swear, I'm not just trying to like hype up the NHL. I'm really not. I think the NHL gets a ton of things wrong. For one, I can hardly ever find their game. I really got to search for their games. But the great thing about this matchup between the Penguins and the Sharks, it is a fun matchup. Both teams can score. Penguins won game one, 3-2. It is fast. It is up and down. You're going to see a lot of action. You're going to see a lot of shots on goal. It's not going to be one of those slow, drag it out, dump and chase, boring games that you're just going, why am I watching hockey? Why am I trying to watch hockey? There isn't anything. I don't get it. No, this will be fun. You'll enjoy it. The Penguins, they are really, really fast. They can skate. They're up and down constantly. They're very, very good at poking the puck loose and getting these breakaway chances to score. On the other side, you've got the Sharks, big, strong. They can physically push you around. They can hang on you. They can dominate you. They can just be physical with you. These games are going to be really, really fun to watch. And the great thing about them, because you might be sitting there saying, well, yeah, but if I have the choice between the NBA and the NHL, I'm not watching hockey. Okay, I get it. But I'll give the NHL a little bit of credit. They didn't go head-to-head against the NBA. Aside from the other night, that was the only time these two games are going to be head-to-head. Now they're going to stagger them. So you don't have to choose. They're going to fall opposite of the NBA Finals. You can watch. I'm telling you right now, if you watch the NHL, if you watch this final series, you're going to be entertained. Contrasting styles should make for a very, very fun series. If the Sharks don't go too deer in the headlights on us, where they're just kind of shocked that they even got there, I think this could be a really, really close series throughout. And they could give Pittsburgh problems with their physicality because they will go down, they'll get it in the offensive end, and they'll just move it around and just kind of physically beat you up. If they do that, I think this could be a really, really good series. I'm hoping this goes seven games. I'm going to make my pick Penguins in seven, but I think this could be a really fun series. If you're not a hockey person, you got to at least check it out. You got to at least try it and see. It's going to be very, very exciting. You're going to see people living and dying with every single shift. I told you I wouldn't talk much hockey, but I got to at least get that out there. You will be entertained if you turn it on. Are you not entertained? You will be entertained if you just turn it on. Okay. Let's get over to the NBA Finals. NBA Finals are finally going to be here on Thursday night. Cleveland Cavaliers, finally, it took them a little bit. They got punched in the mouth twice, but they finally woke up and beat down the Toronto Raptors. I know, the Raptors are awful, and it wasn't really that impressive, but still. They finally knocked them out in six games. Now, they will have rested for about a week before the finals. So let's go ahead and get this ready. Let's get this out of the way right now. If they play really well on Thursday night, then we're going to hear all the experts saying things like, hey, you know, they were rested. They finished up the Raptors in six, so it gave them a few extra days. That's really going to help. It helped them in their preparation. It looks like they're a rested team. Now, if they're horrible, they'll say, well, they've been sitting around for a few extra games. They were a little bit rusty. They just weren't quite as sharp. Expect a little bit better in game two, so we'll just get that stuff out of the way. They've been sitting around for about 5 days, bottom line. Meanwhile, over on the western side of the NBA, things were a little bit more interesting. The Golden State Warriors were down 3-1 to the Oklahoma City Thunder before they finally remembered how to play and beat Oklahoma City three times in a row. Now, before we look at how the Cavs and the Warriors match up, we have to look a little bit at this Warriors-Thunder series because there were a few interesting things going on in this series. Thunder were up 3-1. They were dominating the boards. They were not turning it over much. They were taking pretty good shots. But here's the thing, and something that sometimes teams kind of forget, sometimes fans kind of, you got to beat the champs. The champs have been there. They have the experience. They understand what it takes, and you have to take that crown off their head. Like you can't just hope it falls off. You got to go rip it off their head, or you're not getting it. I want you to think back just for a second. Do you remember game five in this series? Maybe you don't. If you don't, I'll help you remember. The Thunder had played pretty well. They had stayed in it, but the Warriors had hit some shots, especially in the fourth quarter, and it extended out the lead. And at the end of the game, I want to say the Warriors had won by 9 or 10, something like that. And they hadn't played great, but they had hit a few shots. Oklahoma City had actually played pretty well. They had actually played pretty well. And at the end of the game, they showed Kevin Durant. And Kevin Durant had walked down to his teammates and kind of gave them, you know, a little bit of dap and kind of the, hey, guys, it's okay. It's all right. We're going to get him. We played well. Nothing wrong with this. Nothing to hang our head about. Let's stay together. We're okay. And I said this at the time. I don't like that. That's not okay. It's never okay. Not at that level. You had a lead in the second half. You could have finished the Golden State Warriors. You could have ended their reign. You could have taken that crown off their head. You had a chance to step on their throat and end it, and you let them get up off the mat. Big mistake. Big mistake to let them get up. Then you went down there and you gave your teammates the little rah-rah speech, and you made an even bigger mistake because you said, hey, it's okay. It wasn't okay. It's never okay. Not in that situation. You can't do that because then exactly what everyone thought, well, it can't happen, happened. Klay Thompson got going. Here's some stats for you, and I'm not a huge stats guy. I don't throw out many stats. I'm just going to give you a few quick numbers to kind of keep in mind about that series. Three-point shooting percentage by Klay Thompson. In game one, 37%. Okay, solid. Game two, 25%. Not looking so good. Game three, 29%. Yeah, not very good at all. Not very good at all. Klay wasn't playing very good. Game four, he goes 36%. Game five, he goes 22%. His worst game was in game five. Remember? KD was going down telling it, guys, it's okay. It's okay. Klay Thompson's only shooting 22%. We don't have anything to worry about. We're fine. We'll go home to Oklahoma City and we'll finish this out. Except that they didn't. Because in game six, Klay Thompson shot 61% and almost single-handedly buried the Thunder in their own building. He shot 55% outside the three-point line last night. You know, field goals made. The made field goals in this series, a little bit odd, because the Warriors did win 4-3. The Thunder made 270 field goals for the series. The Warriors made 267. 270 to 267. Here's the thing. Three's more than two. And I'll be honest. When I started the Daily Dose, when we started doing all this stuff, I was told there would be no math. But I just, again, three is more than two. Do you see that? Like, I don't want to get too deep with the numbers. Three more than two. I mean, Golden State just kept banging three after three after three. And we sat here and said, well, where were all these threes early? Was Steph hurt? Remember there was all this conversation? Maybe Steph Curry's hurt. I don't think he's 100%. Well, I don't think Klay Thompson was 100%. I don't think Draymond Green was 100%. Nobody was 100% because Oklahoma City was beating them up. But we heard Steve Kerr say it throughout the game on Sunday night. He kept saying it. The entire key to what Golden State does is what Steve Kerr kept preaching to his guys. Move and move the ball. Move and move the ball. You guys aren't moving. You guys aren't moving. You got to move. We got to move the ball. You have to move. You're not moving. If you don't move, we can't do what we need to do. And his guys weren't moving. They weren't doing anything. They were standing. Now, I say that, and Kerr says that. And you sit there and you say, well, that sounds easy. If the Golden State Warriors move around, they'll win the game. And if they don't move around, then they won't. I mean, that's pretty simple, isn't it? It's actually not that easy. See, here's the problem. To move and to run and to get some movement, it takes a lot of work. Like, it takes a lot of work. Moving, especially without the basketball at the offensive end, takes a lot of work. You have to do a lot of quick sprints. You've got to fight to get open. You've got to get through player traffic. You've got to come off of screens. It is a physical toll that it takes on your body. So sometimes you hear coaches say, well, you got to move without the ball. You got to move. You got to move. Sometimes it's not that easy. I'm not saying not to do it. I'm not giving you an excuse. I'm just telling you why sometimes. Well, why wouldn't they move all the time if they knew they'd win? Because sometimes it's hard. Steph Curry comes down. He drives down to the baseline. He passes the ball off. He's down on the baseline. He's got Steven Adams. He's got Russell Westbrook. He's got Kevin Durant. They're all grabbing him. They're all holding him. He's trying to move. He's trying to get off the screen. He's trying to get himself open. But it takes a lot of work. And if you're killing yourself getting those looks, you have nothing left for the defensive end. And if you're trying to guard guys like Russell Westbrook, you don't have any legs left to move around. It takes some stamina. It takes some toughness. And when you hear Steve Kerr or whoever it is talking, and they're saying they've got to get ball movement, understand what they're talking about. The ball has to see both sides of the floor. If I bring the ball up on the right side of the floor and I pass it down to the corner, and he passes it back, and I pass it back, and he passes it back, the ball's not moving. It's all staying on one side. The bottom line is the defense doesn't have to adjust. The defense is basically standing there watching us pass back and forth and play catch. That's not ball movement. Ball movement is when the ball goes to the other side of the floor. The ball goes into the post. The ball gets kicked back out. Now you have guys scrambling. Now you have guys chasing. Now you have guys trying to see the ball and see their man and keep up with both at the same time. Now you start getting it a little more difficult. And those things are the key to what Golden State has to do. When Golden State gets player movement, when they're allowed to move and run and come off of screens, run some curl cuts, run some backdoor cuts. We saw some of that in the game on Monday night. That's when Golden State is at their best. When the ball is moving and seeing both sides of the floor, they're getting penetration into the paint and kicking it back out. That's when you start seeing Golden State have success. When they're not getting that movement and the ball is just sitting and one guy's dribbling it around, that's what we saw early in the series. Klay Thompson was doing a lot of dribble, 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 dribble shot. Defense doesn't have to work very hard at that. That makes things very, very easy. So let's get to our finals preview. Golden State somehow overcomes the Thunder. The Cleveland Cavaliers get by the Toronto Raptors. Who's going to win it? Who's going to win the finals preview? Let's take a look. Because this is a rematch from a year ago. Don't forget that last year, the Cavaliers started this series up 2-1. They lost Kyrie Irving. They lost Kevin Love. Remember, Amon Shumpert was pretty banged up. But the thing that I wonder about, Cleveland almost looked like they were a little bit better defensively and more apt to dump the ball inside with those guys out of the lineup. Like, to match up against Golden State, having those guys out wasn't the worst thing in the world. I think Cleveland was actually a little bit better defensively with those guys out. Now, when these two teams faced in the regular season, Warriors won both games, a very close game at home, very low scoring, it was like an 86-80 game at Golden State. And then they went to Cleveland and blew them out. I don't even know if LeBron played in that game. So who wins this? Let's look at a couple kind of determining factors, okay? Couple things that I just want you to kind of, as we're getting closer, we start playing these games on Thursday, few things that might give us an idea of which way it's going to go. Most likely to hit a game winner. You got both teams. You got a couple different guys on each team that could hit a game winner. I mean, LeBron James has taken a lot of big shots with the game on the line. Klay Thompson, how good has he been shooting late? I mean, he is hitting everything he throws up. Still the guy to me that is most likely to hit that game winner is Steph Curry. I mean, Klay has been phenomenal, but Steph, it just feels like no moment is too big for that guy. Like, he catches it, and he, some of the shots that he puts up, like, you look at him and you're almost like, that's a horrible shot, but he makes it so often, it goes in so often, that you say, oh, that's a terrible shot for anyone on the planet but him. It's a great shot for him, and he has that quick release where it almost looks like he just chucked it, like he's just trying to beat the shot clock, he just threw something up there, but for him, it goes in. So a guy that's most likely to hit the game winner, I got to go with Steph Curry. He's just that guy. A guy that is most likely to get hurt. Injuries could play a big part of this. One thing that helped, I think, Golden State, we talked about this throughout the season. Who comes out of this healthy and goes into the finals? Because Cleveland, let's be honest, they haven't really been tested over that eastern side. But the Warriors are relatively healthy, maybe a little banged up. I don't know how good Steph's knee is. He got a little banged up in that game seven, but I think they're better. But who's most likely to get? I got to go with Cavs forward Kevin Love. Yeah, I think he gets hurt literally every single day of his life. Like, he gets out of bed and just crumbles to the floor. Every day, it seems like K-Love is hurt. So if an injury takes place in this series, I'm going to say it's probably Kevin Love that gets hurt. That just, I don't know. I don't think he ever is healthy. Most likely to get his legacy talked about ad nauseum. Who would that be? I guess you can talk about the Splash Brothers and what kind of a legacy are Steph Curry and Klay Thompson putting together. What kind of legacy is Steve Kerr putting together? But let's be honest. We know we're going to be talking about LeBron James's legacy. That's all they talk about. That's all anybody talks about. He's a talented guy. He's a bigger, stronger, faster guy than anyone else in the league. Of course, he's playing in a watered-down NBA, and he's only won two, you know, finals. But we're going to put that aside and say we're going to talk about LeBron James's legacy again and again and how he's better than Bird, even though Bird won more finals. And he's better than Magic, even though Magic won, like, three times as many finals. He's better than Jordan, even though it's not even close. We're going to talk a lot about LeBron James's legacy. And here's the big question. Here's the question that I have for LeBron James' legacy. If he loses another one, where does his legacy stand then? It's all fun and games to sit here and say, well, if he wins another one, that gives him three. That puts him in the class with Bird. That puts him in the, you know, up there with Magic. What if he loses another one? Then where do you put him? I mean, does he ever drop down, or do we just keep saying, well, he's bigger and stronger and faster every single year? That's just what we say. Most likely to oversleep and forget there was a game. Huh. That's a tough one. There's a few different guys that could do that. I'm going to go with Cavs guard J.R. Smith. I feel like J.R. Smith could have been out partying, might have, you know, just forgot what he's doing, just woke up one day. It's 8:30 at night. What? I feel like I had something going. What did I have going on today? I had something. I feel like I should be. You ever had a thing where you're like, I feel like I'm forgetting something. I don't know what it is. I don't know if I forgot to. Did I leave the stove on? Did I leave a light on in the bathroom? What? Oh, we had a game tonight. We're supposed to play game three against the Warriors tonight. I can totally see J.R. Smith doing that. Most likely to whine on literally every single play. Like, if there's ever a foul, if there's ever a travel, if there's ever anything, he's going to whine on every single play. That's a tough one. LeBron definitely has that face down. Like, LeBron to this day in his entire career has never committed a foul, so he's going to get a couple votes. But I got to go with Andrew Bogut. I got to go with the big guy with the Golden State Warriors. He's got the face. He kind of crinkles up the eye. I didn't touch him, and we could actually see you draw blood. So yeah, I'm going to go with Andrew Bogut as the guy that's going to complain on every single play. Who is most likely to be really, really angry if the Warriors win it all? Like, Cavs fans are going to be upset. Cavs fans are going to be hot. The table is kind of set, finally, for a Cleveland franchise to win the entire thing. If Cleveland doesn't win it, I'm telling you right now, Cavs fans, they just might burn down the city anyways. I mean, it's going to be ugly. But I'm going to tell you, he's going to be a little bit more mad. A little bit more upset if the Warriors win it all. It's got to be TNT analyst Charles Barkley. He keeps picking against Golden State. He's been picking against Golden State for the past 2 years, and they keep proving him wrong. Chuck sits there, hey, just a jump shooting team. You can't win it all. Hey, jump shooting team can't win it all. Jump shooting, that's terrible. Jump shooting team can't win it all. They keep winning. They keep winning. And you know, Chuck is going to be hot if they win it again and prove him wrong again. He's been saying for 2 years they can't win anything. Did you see the Warriors fan? There's like a Golden State fan, I guess, that, I don't know, lives in Oklahoma City or something. And he was out at a bar that Barkley was at, and he wanted to fight Barkley because Barkley picked the Thunder to beat the Warriors. Let's understand one thing. Let's get one thing real clear. Chuck is like, granted, he's not as big as he said. Chuck's like 6'4", but he's like 265. I don't know, maybe he's lost a couple of pounds. You don't want to fight Chuck. I mean, can we get, I don't know who we have to see about this, but could we get Barkley like a one-time-a-year pass, like he gets a once-a-year pass where you have a dumb fan like this that's like, I want to fight you for picking the wrong team, that Chuck's just like, yeah, all right, let's go. Just, I mean, knuckle up. Let's do this. Enough talking. Enough, you know, hold me back. Hold me back. Get between us. We don't need that. No, hey, you want to fight him? Right, let's get you guys in a bar and let's let him start hooking. That would be great. Because most of these guys, and you know this guy is probably that 5'7 guy that, you know, works his office job and had one too many pops and was like, oh, fight Barkley anytime. Yeah, let him go. Let's go ahead and see if we can get Chuck a pass. Just like once a year, he goes out and he just punches a guy in the face. Remember the one guy he did fight? This is back, years back. And some guy actually was going to fight him, and he was talking trash to him in a bar. And Chuck threw him through a plate glass window. Now, I don't think Charles Barkley's a fighter, but he's a bigger human being than most normal human beings. You're not going to fight Chuck. Get out of here with this nonsense. Chuck is going to be mad, though, if Golden State wins again. Speaking of guys who are a little bit bigger boned, most likely player on the floor for either team to eat an opposing player. That's tough. You got Mozgov over on Cleveland. He's a big dude. I got to go with Warriors big man Maurice Spates, though. Dude is, like, if you looked up in the encyclopedia the word pant load, you would see a picture of Maurice Spates. Like, that's a big dude. And he looks like he might be hungry. Like, he just might be, yeah, I'm a little bit hungry tonight. And every once in a while, he steps up and makes a really, really big play. Most likely to injure your entire team on accident. Like, he dives for a loose ball, and he just shreds the knees of every single guy on your entire roster. Who else could it be? We got to go with Cavs guard Matthew Dellavedova. He's just that guy. Looks like Teen Wolf out there running around, knocking people over, has no idea what he's doing. He's on accident. I didn't mean to. Just took out your whole team. If I was going to make a pick on this series, I had to make a pick. I'll be honest, Cleveland Cavaliers have more talent. They have more size. They have more depth. The Cleveland Cavaliers should absolutely win this series. Everyone is healthy. There's no excuse there. All these guys are healthy. They should be able to dominate Golden State in the paint. They should be able to dominate Golden State on the glass. And we've seen the teams that have given Golden State a little bit of trouble, if you can pressure them a little bit, if you can keep them from getting those extra chances, because remember, three is more than two. If you keep them from getting those extra chances where they bury you with an offensive board and then a three-point shot, I could see them beating the Warriors in this series. Cleveland Cavaliers, honestly, should beat the Warriors in this series. Here is the problem. Here's where I could see them having a problem, though. If they try to go out, and they did this a couple times against Toronto, they've done this a little bit in the playoffs. They did it against Atlanta a few times. If they go out and they try to outshoot the Warriors and they stay perimeter and they're, hey, we're going to out-warrior you, you don't get into that kind of game. You don't want to do that with the Warriors. Don't try to beat them at their own game. You will struggle if that's the case. Golden State contests 66% of every shot that goes up. That is one of the highest percentages in the NBA. Cleveland, just for reference, Cleveland is a little below average, but they're at about 57%. Golden State is going to contest everything you shoot. You don't want to shoot contested long-range shots. That will not go well for you. If Cleveland pounds it inside, Cleveland will give them a big, big problem. But I struggle to take Cleveland. I really do. They haven't been tested. They haven't had to go through what the Warriors have had to go through. Oklahoma City, and I can't believe it, might be the most talented team in the NBA. And it took them seven games, and it took them, I mean, all 48 minutes of that seventh game, but they might have beat the best team just now. The only question I guess I would have is, did it wear them out? I'm going to make my pick, Golden State Warriors in seven. As we do every single week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose top five. You know, a lot of talk, of course, about Stephen Curry, about Klay Thompson. Is that the best backcourt duo ever? It's possible. It's possible. Now, here's the problem for me. They haven't done it long enough. You've basically done it for two, maybe three seasons. I've got to see a little bit more from you before I can put you in there. But I'll be honest. When you look at the scoring punch that they have, scoring-wise, I can put them probably up there against anybody. Are they the best backcourt duo? This week on the Daily Dose, we count down the best backcourt duos. Now, I didn't go all stats on this. Sometimes I'll dig out some stats, and I got a few, but I didn't go all stats on these guys. I went with who would I want to see. And I'll be honest, Klay and Steph are must-see TV for me. You might like them. You might hate them. You might be a fan of the Warriors. You might not be able to stand the Warriors. I know people on both sides. They are entertaining to me. They are fascinating to watch. And so this week, I picked my Daily Dose top five best backcourt duos, and Steph and Klay might end up being number one. But not yet. Not yet. Because right now, I have a full slate of what these guys did. I got to see how Steph and Klay end up. What if they get beat by the Cavaliers and they only win one? They're okay. Maybe they're top five. They're not top of the mountain, though. Let's look at the top five best backcourt duos. Number five. Now, this is a little bit before my time. I had to go out and dig up some film. I had to go look at some of these guys. One of the guys I had studied a little bit, but I got to go with the Lakers. Back in the late 60s and early 70s, Gail Goodrich and Jerry West. I mean, they won the title once, but these guys could score. Now, they played together from 65 to 68, and then Goodrich went to Phoenix for a little while, and he came back, and they played again for another 4 years, 70 to 74. They won the title, I believe it was in 71, 72, right around then. But here's the number to just throw out there. Goodrich and West averaged 52 points per game combined in 71-72. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Yeah, except for that they did it without a three-point line. There were no three-pointers. 52 points a game, 26 points apiece, with no threes. What would they be shooting today? They'd be averaging like 70 today. And, you know, they were both jump shooters. It wasn't like, hey, this guy's a slasher, this guy goes to the basket, this guy finishes around the rim. No, they're jump shooters. That's amazing shooting. You want scoring? Gail Goodrich and Jerry West, the logo, would give you some major, major scoring. I'll take them. Number four on my list, best backcourts. And like I said, this isn't statistical. This is who I want to see. This is me. This is what I want to see. I got to go with the Philadelphia 76ers back in the late 70s and early 80s. Maurice Cheeks and Andrew Toney. They won the title in 83. Cheeks was the steady passer, very good defender, always found the right guy to get the ball to. And Andrew Toney was an assassin. They called him the Boston Strangler. In 1981, the 76ers were up 3-1 on Boston on the Eastern Conference Final. Does that sound familiar at all? Up 3-1? Boston stopped Andrew Toney and came back to win the series. So the next season, they were up 3-1 again. And this time, they said, okay, all we got to do is stop Toney, and we're going to beat him again. Except Toney wouldn't let them stop him. He scored 34 and knocked out Boston and got the nickname the Boston Strangler. You can go back. You can go to YouTube. You can pull up some of Andrew Toney's games. And Maurice Cheeks, like I said, he was steady, got the ball to the right guy, good defensively, very, very smart, knocked down the shot when he needed to. Andrew Toney could just fill it up. Long range, could hit it. Mid range, could beat you and just had a pretty, pretty jumper. Andrew Toney was just nasty. Ended up, having some foot problems that limited him just to 8 years in the league. But that duo of Maurice Cheeks and Andrew Toney, that was as nasty as you could find. They did win a title. Number three on my list, best backcourt duos. I got to go with the Detroit Pistons, Isaiah Thomas and Joe Dumars. They won two championships there at the late 80s. And the thing about Isaiah and Joe Dumars, they could do it at both ends of the floor. Hey, Isaiah could put up 25 a night anytime he wanted to. I think he's a very, very underrated player. We kind of forget how good Isaiah was. Like, we remember the stuff he had with Jordan at the end. Isaiah could go out and just drop 40 on you in a night. He was so explosive. He's only 6 foot. He wasn't a big guy. He might not have been that tall. I know they listed him at 6'1". I also know they lied. I met Isaiah once. He wasn't 6'1". But, you know, it wasn't just Isaiah. No one gave Michael Jordan the problems like the Pistons did, and no one played him better than Joe Dumars did. And Mike even said that himself. He said, Joe Dumars gave me more problems than anyone I ever faced. The Isaiah Thomas, Joe Dumars backcourt, they were tough. They were physical. They could score on you. They could shut you down. They might have been a little bit dirty. These two were nasty. But if you wanted to win a game, yeah, you could do worse than picking Isaiah Thomas and Joe Dumars. That was a nasty, nasty backcourt. I'd go with them. Number two on my list. Man, do I got to go with another Laker combo here? I feel bad picking. I know we have a lot of listeners out in California, but man, another Lakers. I got to go with Magic Johnson, and I'm going to go with Byron Scott. I could go Michael Cooper. But, you know, Byron's skills just meshed really, really well with Magic because he could run the floor well. He could shoot it from outside. He could slash. He could defend. He could do a lot of different things, and Magic could always find him. Not that, you know, Cooper wasn't a great player as well, but, I mean, when you think about it, this combo won three titles, and when they won these three, Kareem was kind of starting to get older. It wasn't like it was just dump the ball into Kareem and let him go to work every possession. He was starting to get a little bit older. Showtime at its finest was Magic Johnson running the floor, James Worthy on one side, Byron Scott on the other, and you did not know where that ball was going to go. For my number two backcourt of all time, I'll go with Magic Johnson and Byron Scott. And to be honest, I could probably put just about anybody in there with Magic Johnson because whoever was there was going to be pretty good. But Byron Scott was a very, very nice fit for that. That is my number two. My number one best backcourt duo. Who could it be? Number of different great guards, obviously, that are out there. Number of guards, if we go back older, you know, go back to Oscar Robertson and some of those guys. Who could my number one backcourt duo of all time be? Well, I got to go with results. So I'm going to go with the Chicago Bulls, Michael Jordan, and whoever else they put out there with him. I don't care. You want John Paxson? All right. B.J. Armstrong? Yeah, okay. Ron Harper? Sure. How about Steve Kerr? Yeah, just put someone out there with Mike, and you're going to be fine because he's probably the best basketball player to ever play the game. Paxson and Kerr were a great complement because they could find spots, find seams, and they could knock down that open shot. Don't underestimate how good they were at knocking down. They didn't get many. They didn't get many. When they got them, they had to knock them down or Mike wasn't going to give them the ball again. B.J. Armstrong, pretty good playmaker, pretty good passer, very, very solid player in the years. And then Ron Harper, people forget how good Ron Harper was back before all the knee injuries. When he was Cleveland, he was the man in Cleveland, and he could light up the scoreboard. I'd probably go with Harper as being probably the best backcourt mate because by the time he came to Chicago, the knees had kind of gotten away from him. He was a very good defender. He was a very smart player, and he's a very, very tough guy. But this backcourt duo, Michael Jordan and whoever, six titles. And don't forget one important item. They could have had eight if Mike hadn't gone and, you know, messed around with baseball. Hey, next week on the show, we will have updates on the NBA and the NHL. Major League Baseball, of course, starting to get a little bit more watchable. Might have to keep an eye on that. The NFL seems like it's always in the news. And we might have to start looking a little bit towards some college football. One thing to keep in mind about the Daily Dose, we are getting into a little bit of a dry season. Not as much going on. A little bit, you know, don't have the NFL, don't have college football. A lot of those things. Never fear. We will have some things to keep you entertained over the summer. I know a lot of shows, they're going to start playing you repeats. We'll have something for you to keep you entertained here on the Daily Dose. If you get a chance, head over to wherever it is that you download the podcast. Give a quick rating and a review. We would appreciate that so much. That helps us just get seen by a few more people. If you get a chance, head over to rogueintel.com. You can interact with us. You can get on the message boards. You can go onto our forum and talk to us there as well. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next week.